Well, good afternoon. Dominic Steele is my name. Welcome along to the Pastor's Heart for another week. We are live on Facebook every Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and you can ask your questions live each week to our guest. And then, of course, we're available as an audio podcast and as a video on thepastorsheart.net. Now, today, our guest is Bruce Burgess. He's the National Director, the Australian Director of the movement Peacewise, and they're an organisation that's committed to helping Christians deal with conflict. And there's lots of questions because there's conflict everywhere, but particularly today we're going to be thinking about conflict in the church. And so, Bruce, welcome along.
Hello, Dominic.
Thanks for joining us. Now, we are today sitting here having this discussion in the midst of uncertainty about who will be the leader of the Liberal Party in Australia, who will be the Prime Minister of Australia. I don't want to talk politics, but unity, because I heard Malcolm Turnbull, just an hour or so ago, say that in politics, disunity is death. Is that true in the church as well?
Well, that's entirely true for the church. And the truth that Malcolm has revealed for the world in terms of politics is actually getting to the heart of the fact that in community, well, people live in community, mm-hmm. and if they are in disunity, well, then that breaks the community. And mm-hmm. so if we think about a church context, if there's conflict, that means that that body of people is not heading in the one direction. They will be internally consumed, as we see in mm-hmm. the political sphere, and their ability to achieve their mission will be severely compromised.
Right. Okay. So, therefore, as a pastor, I want to just think, I'm never going to have conflict. I just go on with trying to keep the mission of the church focused about Jesus. But I heard a throwaway line, I think it was from you, a few weeks ago, where you said, pastors are insane if they don't think they're going to need to deal with conflict. What did you mean by that line?
Well, what I meant by that is that every pastor knows they are going to deal with conflict. It's just that some of them will try and avoid it no matter what. Mm-hmm. Some of them will say, because I don't want to deal with it and it scares the heck out of me mm-hmm. and it's actually...
Because I do want my mission to be all about going on about Jesus and his mission, I don't want there to be conflict.
I do, but because I don't know how to deal with it, and because it exhausts me, and because I think, well, if I acknowledge there's any conflict, well, then that will ruin the church, therefore I will pretend it doesn't exist. And I will even potentially send a subconscious message to the people in my congregation, we don't do conflict here.
Okay, so, well, just let's talk first about what kinds of conflicts are pastors likely to come across.
Yeah. Right. So the very natural conflicts that are the result of people being different. Mm-hmm. You want to express yourself a particular way in worship, mm-hmm. and for me, that's completely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. You want contemporary, I want traditional. You want the mission of the church to be focused on external missionaries, mm-hmm. I want it to be focused on the poor in my community. Mm-hmm. You want the preaching to be done a particular exegetical style, I want it to be topical. Mm-hmm. My preference being different to yours, my personality being different to yours, my priorities being different to yours, my values even potentially, and my beliefs being different to yours mean that those things are going to come into tension.
Okay, we've established all the areas you're wrong.
Oh, does he need help? Yes, Dominic. So this is going to be a good session.
So what's the way forward?
Well, I mean, the first way forward is actually theological rather than practical. I mean, I know as human beings we want to quickly get to the solution, mm-hmm. but given that we live in a church community, we actually need to get our thinking about conflict right first. Because one of the things that sits behind the avoidant behaviour is conflict somehow, my mm-hmm. gut tells me, mm-hmm. and I follow my gut tells me conflict is bad.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, yeah, well, that's how I feel.
Yeah. Conflict is bad, therefore I have to avoid it, and conflict is sinful.
So you're saying actually that's not necessarily the case.
Correct. In a fallen world, conflict is inevitable. Mm-hmm. we are going to experience the conflict in our lives mm-hmm. on a regular basis. We look at our families, we look at our social networks, our clubs, our churches.
So how do you do healthy conflict?
Well, the first thing is to accept that conflict is neutral. Mm-hmm. The Bible doesn't say, yes, it's bad, or no, or that it's good. It actually says that the key to responding well to conflict is to respond in a God-pleasing way. So not that conflict itself is bad, but...
In fact, sometimes it's going to be excellent.
It can be excellent. And, I mean, the healthy conflict of ideas is exactly
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of... A junior team member joined our staff meeting at some stage a few years ago, and they were a bit shocked at how vigorously we were debating an issue in the staff meeting, and because they'd only ever seen us in complete agreement. You know? But actually, it was the workshopping of the ideas
correct.
Out of which the best idea came.
Yeah. So conflict actually, towards the end of his letter to the Corinthian church, in 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about, he says, you know, after all the conflicts that have happened in that church, he's getting to the end and he says, so whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Mm-hmm. So a foundational principle is, even in the midst of conflict, seek to glorify God, to please mm-hmm. and honour him. So look for, how can I trust and honour God in this situation? How can conflict be an opportunity for God to work rather than just some huge disaster where God's left the building?
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than having this mindset that says conflict's a disaster, so we won't talk about it, we won't mm-hmm. deal with it, we will avoid it, instead, how can God work through this conflict mm-hmm. in this community?
Well, let me start with one question we've got on Facebook, which kind of, I think, alludes to a bad way of dealing it.
Mm.
And Melissa Tyrrell asks us, how can you start addressing conflict in a healthy way when a team only speaks about the issues amongst smaller groups and doesn't share them when everyone's together?
Okay, so there are subgroups mm-hmm. that talk about conflict, so we assume that they're not gossiping because they wouldn't do that.
Yeah. So
we're having small groups who feel safe to talk, but when it's the big group together, it's a taboo subject.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the starting point would be to normalise the ability to actually discuss conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So that group will have a leader, and so desirably that leader will see that there is value in the group being able to do exactly what you described mm-hmm. in your mm-hmm. meeting, where mm-hmm. people can voice different opinions,
mm-hmm.
and it's safe to do that. People are not going to be squashed to do that. But coming from the mindset that, you know, we may disagree, and mm-hmm. it's okay to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if there is actual conflict, it's not just the disagreement of ideas, there's actually relational breakdown that has mm. taken place, that's not going to be addressed by what we might call escape responses, the mm. ones that fake it by denying that conflict exists or running away and just avoiding dealing with it. So
now you say these escape responses, I think you're alluding to, I mean, I've got this little card that you've brought in, but I think we can put it up on the screen. You've got, on the one hand, escape responses,
yep.
and on the other hand, attack responses,
yep.
and then some peacemaking responses in the middle.
Yep.
Can you just explain this slippery slope? And just, we've got some people who are able to watch it on the screen,
yep.
but there are some people listening to the audio podcast, so we'll
sure.
have to do it for
yep.
both.
Yeah. So everyone is familiar with the concept of fight and flight,
mm-hmm.
that these are natural human responses.
I run away, or I move to attack you.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Because they're the two default responses that we typically have and that the world teaches us and maybe our family of origin taught us in how to deal with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So either I can't deal with it, so I'm going to run away from it mm-hmm. or pretend it's not there. And the ultimate escape response is actually suicide,
mm.
which says life is so bad, the conflict is in my life is so bad, the conditions are so bad that I will completely escape.
So I'm looking here and you've got suicide, flight, and denial
yeah.
as the escape responses.
That's right.
And you're calling them peace faking.
Peace faking as
okay.
the equivalent of flight responses, escape
okay.
responses.
Yep.
So then on the other side, people who try and deal with conflict by aggression,
mm-hmm.
by getting their own way through force.
Mm-hmm.
So these we call the fight responses, but the aggression, the peace breaking responses, and we call these attack responses.
So assault, litigation, and murder.
Yep, yeah. and assault being either physical assault, but the much more common form of assault is through our words
mm-hmm.
and through our behaviours. We might give someone the passive-aggressive silent treatment.
Right.
So these kinds of behaviors, trying to get what we want by actually making the person bow to our will. We might, I mean, I was hearing of a conflict today where someone was so upset with an organization, said, unless you do this, then, which could be, historically, might be, I'm going to sue you, but these days, even worse, might be, I'm going to actually post on your Facebook site and tell people what you're really like. Not that they would do that to the pastor's heart, Dom.
What about the middle group, the peacemaking responses?
Okay, so the peacemaking responses, there are two broad groups. One is the things that we can do ourselves. One is the group of responses that involve help. So looking at ourselves, the first peacemaking response is one that people typically don't even consider. And that is to overlook the offence. Now, that is not the same as denying, pretending it didn't happen. Proverbs talks about it. It's to a person's glory to overlook an offence in Proverbs 29:11. And what that's saying is there are times where an offence is not so big that it has to actually be pursued vigorously. You could choose, as an act of kindness, simply to overlook it in the sense of forgiving a person for something minor. When it's more serious than that, it can't be overlooked because it's maybe affecting our relationship in a more serious way.
Okay, reconciliation?
So reconciliation...
I'm just going through them.
Is the step that involves going to your brother and sister and talking to them. So Matthew 18, if your brother or sister sins against you, go to them and show them their fault. And if they listen to you, not you've won them over.
Negotiation
is really, there are times where we actually work through issues that are disagreements. So we might have a disagreement on how to allocate the church's finances. That's something that has to be negotiated. There are ungodly and godly ways to have a negotiation. Philippians 2 talks about looking to the other person's interest. We hear about interest-based negotiation, really came from the Bible. And it says, you know, look not only to your own interest, but also to the interests of others. And so it's possible to have a principled negotiation where it's not a zero-sum game. So sometimes going one-on-one doesn't resolve the issues, relational or material, and then you actually may need help from a third party. So going round the slope, the next one there...
Mediation.
So that's where other people who are wise and respected can come into the situation and actually help the parties talk together with a view to helping them restore their relationship, which, by the way, is one of the huge distinctives of Christian mediation, that it is invested in restoring relationship, not just cutting a deal, not just bringing an end to hostility, but actually restoring relationship.
So it's also a difference between, as a Christian manager, I'm not just looking for productivity, I'm actually looking for you to flourish. Do you know?
And just an aside for a minute, there is a wonderful book that I'd love to recommend by Gary Hogue and Scott Rodin. It's not one of the ones in front of me. It's called The Choice, which looks at the question of success in Christian ministry. I would really recommend every pastor and other leader, employer watching this to read The Choice, because it talks about success not in terms of the normal secular metrics of size and growth and you know, KPIs, but actually are our organizations reflecting God's call for us to do what he's called us to do in his way with the resources he's given us, and it includes a huge section on how we treat people.
Okay, and the next one, adjudication.
So adjudication is the option to, if you've got a dispute on an issue, to actually have a respected Christian person decide it for you, rather than go to a secular court. 1 Corinthians 6, you know, Paul saying, are you crazy? What are you doing taking these disputed matters before secular judges? Instead, why don't you actually have someone within your community who's coming from the same mindset and belief system as you make the decision for you, rather than take it before a secular court?
And then your last one here is accountability.
So accountability is the concept, again, from Matthew 18. If your brother and sister don't listen to you, take one or two others along. If they don't listen to them, then tell it to the church. If they don't listen to the church, then treat them like a tax collector, which doesn't mean shun them and never have anything to do with them again, but it means actually they're now restricted from being able to participate in the church in the same way. There are consequences for their sinful behavior that they're not turning from. Mm-hmm. And that's accountability before the church, that the church will actually seek to bring them back into community, at the same time lovingly and gently bringing before them, this is the behavior that is damaging and destructive for you and for the community that we want you to address.
Mm.
So there's a restorative purpose to that accountability.
Mm. Now, how do you, if you're saying to me that there's going to be a moment where there's going to be conflict in my church,
yeah,
and right now it doesn't feel like we've got rocky water,
yeah,
how do I prepare now for that inevitable day?
Yeah, well, that is an excellent question, because you know it's like the person who doesn't think that they've got heart disease until they discover that they do, and they've been eating unhealthily for a long period of time. Instead, eat healthily over a long period. Mm-hmm. So build relational health into the church by teaching them, first of all, a right theology of how to understand conflict, mm-hmm. but then giving them practical teaching on how do I deal with this stuff when it arises. So
now, I noticed today in your little monthly e-news that you send around, you were referring to the Joseph story, and I just started to read that. But what's the principles in the Joseph story, that Genesis, that you would want to teach us from there?
Okay, so that particular devotion was focusing on glorifying God, mm-hmm. that even in the midst of the difficult situation that Joseph was facing, and mm-hmm. he was treated unjustly, he was, you know, subjected to sexual temptation, etc.
So the guy's, I've got big problems. My brothers have thrown me down a well. I'm in a mess.
Yeah.
And yet I call my children Ephraim and Manasseh, forgive and forget.
So one of the driving principles of Joseph's life was, no matter what's happening to me, I can trust God.
Yeah.
And I actually think trusting God is one of the hardest things to do in the Christian life when things are going badly, even when things are going well, to trust Him. But what does that mean in practice? It means, well, God, can I believe that no matter what is happening in my life, you have a purpose for it, and that that could be a good purpose? It could include, for example, the opportunity to serve others in the midst of a conflict. Mm-hmm. So Joseph, as we know, was placed in Egypt, was subjected to all kinds of terrible things, but towards the end of the book he says, you intended it for harm, but God intended it for good. And he saved Egypt by having them provisioned through the famines. So sometimes we might be dealing with a really difficult person. Mm. It's not just us. Mm-hmm. They have trouble with everyone, but no one has had the gentleness of heart, or maybe the skill and desire to have a loving conversation with them and say...
So how do you do that? I mean, I'm just thinking of a woman right now.
Yeah.
And we had an incident, you know, a disagreement.
Mm.
And I was trying to work out, was it me?
Mm.
And I rang up another pastor that used to interact with her. Mm. And I said, I'm just trying to work out this situation. He said, sometimes someone tells you a story, and you think, oh, that's totally different to my experience with that person.
Mm.
And sometimes somebody tells you a story, and that's exactly the same as my interaction with that person, and I'm not surprised at all.
Mm.
Now, how would I handle it differently in those two different situations as a pastor?
Well, let's pick the one where it's the same story.
Yeah, that she's got a history of kind of dominating, breaking, whatever.
So, a few things. First of all, Romans 12:18 says, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Mm-hmm. So, part of that is a recognition that you're called to be a peacemaker and to do everything in your power to bring peace into that relationship, mm-hmm. but you're not God.
Mm.
And you can't make peace.
Mm.
So, sometimes there is a recognition that it may not be possible at this time
mm-hmm.
with that person. But secondly, if you prepare your heart well so that the conversation is gentle,
mm-hmm.
that's a really good start. You prepare, you ask for God's help. The preparation before the conversation is hugely important in having the conversation. And also begin with, let's say this lady's name is Fran. Let's call her Fran. Fran, I want to talk to you about our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to start by saying how much I value my relationship with you. Mm-hmm. That you're an important person in my life and in this community, and there's a fracture. And I'd love us to be able to talk and see if we can get things back onto a better track. So starting with not, this is what I need you to change, but you matter to me. Our relationship matters. It matters to God. So affirming them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can look to what have you done that's contributed. Honestly, search mm-hmm. your own heart, you know, before we start pointing out the speck in the other person's eye.
And then apologize for the maximum that I can apologize for.
With integrity. It's mm-hmm. not trying to invent things that don't exist, but with integrity, what can you own? What is yours to own that you can say, I'm so sorry. As I think about what's happened between us, I realize that this is what I've done, and I would love to own that before you and give a really good apology. And if you go on our website, we have this thing called the 7 A's of apology, mm-hmm. which teaches you how to give a good apology.
Mm-hmm.
Apologize, and then it's possible to say something like, would it be okay if I share with you some things that I've experienced that have impacted me? So it's not, and now I'm going to nail you to the wall, now that mm-hmm. I've got my bit out of the way, but can I gently raise with you some things that I would like to discuss because they're impacting me, and see how that conversation goes. You might find a receptiveness if she feels that you're not trying to actually attack her. Mm-hmm. You actually have a genuine desire to seek to restore something. If you raise it in a gentle way, still with courage, I mean, it's still mm-hmm. hard to have that conversation, she may actually recognize something that this is not something just between her and you, but it actually applies in all of her relationships. And that's the case with the person where the story is the same, whoever you talk to. Mm. If it's the one-off and that wasn't that person's experience, there would be an even greater chance that kind of conversation is going to go well. And then following the conversation forward, move into the part of seeking to work through the issues and to forgive each other. And part of that is when you're apologizing, actually saying the thing that we very rarely hear in an Aussie context, and I suspect in a world context, will you forgive me?
And I don't like saying it because it makes me so vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly, it does. And that's one of the reasons we don't say it, because of our pride. And because it's out of our control then.
Mm.
They may forgive us. If it's a big thing, we may say, I hope that you can forgive me in time, because it may take them time to be able to forgive you.
Mm.
But the thing is, it opens the possibility that they might say yes. And if they say yes, I forgive you, Dominic, something wonderful has happened. Mm. Some restoration has taken place. Even if there was a sort of a detente that had happened because of the conversation before, asking for forgiveness and receiving forgiveness takes things to a different place.
Mm. We've got a couple of other questions I want to bring to you. One of them from James Flavin, and he's asked, how do we teach peacemaking to our children?
Right. So, first of all, our children are watching everything that we do,
mm-hmm.
so we are already teaching them.
Mm.
What we do in front of them will teach them.
So it's the way I relate with the phone company.
Yep, it's the way I relate with the phone company, with the awkward family member, and with them.
Mm-hmm.
So in my family, I have learned a lot from my children. They have helped me to change in areas mm-hmm. where I needed to change, and I've sought to teach them some mm-hmm. of these principles so that they know how to apologize, how to mm-hmm. forgive, how to raise mm-hmm. issues. In a more structured sense, Peacewise as a ministry has for the last decade focused on adults, mm-hmm. but in the last 2 years we have been working like crazy to develop material that can be used to teach these principles to children, because they are the future of our nation. And so,
I've got a question exactly on that, so let me just go to that. Karen Davidson's asked, in a school setting, we can see that children don't know how to handle conflict well, and they are often not helped by the adults in their lives, teachers and parents. Often they're given bad advice or bad models. Mm. She understands Peacewise is developing some resources for children and youth. Can you tell us a bit about it?
I can.
That sounded like that was where you were going.
It was where I was going. So this that I'm showing you here is the children's version of the slippery slope that we had up
yep.
earlier. Peacewise has developed material that is available now from years 7 to 10, two different courses, and we're doing more, to actually give teachers and parents and youth group leaders and homeschoolers material that they can use to teach these principles to children. So it's video-based lessons, interactive content, in-class activities that they can use so that this stuff becomes part of the relational DNA of our children, because they are facing conflict more than even we did. It is endemic in our society. And how they handle relationships is going to be a massive impact on the rest of their life and all the communities that they belong to. So this material is being developed. It's already available for some school years now, and it's at piecewisekids.org. And that is because we believe this is such a strategic thing to be doing, to share materials that can be used to teach these principles to our children.
Can I try a parenting idea out on you that we found helpful that then has impacted our marriage? In terms of a kid does something wrong, we reserve the word saying just, oh, I'm sorry about that, for when it was an accident. But when they'd actually done something wrong, they had to say, Mum, Dad, I should not have stuffed my sister's pajamas down the toilet, you know, or hypothetically. Would you please forgive me? And really that request for forgiveness again. And then either we would say, I forgive you, or I'll need to think about that. But once we'd said, I forgive you, we never mentioned it again, because it had been washed clean.
Yep.
And really, it was teaching them that in parenting, and then actually bringing that same practice. I should not have turned up at 7 p.m. when I said I'd be home at 5:30, hypothetically.
Yeah, yes, of course.
Would you please forgive me? Do you know? And to bring that into our marriage in the same way. Do you want to kind of bounce around with that on me?
Well, I think that's a perfect framework. There'd probably be some amplification that could be given to them.
Amplify it for me, yeah.
Well, one amplification would be, if it's something that a person has done that's sort of seriously wrong, it would be good to hear them say, and I promise to try not to do that again, or in future I'm going to do this.
Yep.
Another element is, if it's something big, acknowledging the hurt.
Yeah.
That this, I'm so sorry that I was an hour late, and I realised that ruined the dinner, and that you'd gone to a huge effort for it, and that was so upsetting. So actually to give some recognition that this has had an emotional impact. If it's something that has had a broader impact, so maybe there are more people affected, maybe if we go back to the earlier question, let's say that in that team, let's say that there was a really intense negative conversation that happened in the big team, and it happened in front of everyone.
Yeah, because, I mean, lots of staff teams will have had that.
Yeah, they will have. So those two people ideally would go and seek to resolve that privately, but then come back to the big team and say, we are sorry for the way this impacted the whole team. We want you to know that we've raised it with each other, we've apologised, we've forgiven each other, but we also wanted to apologise to you, because there's a broader impact between just the two of us. And we want the team to be healthy, to have that unity that we talked about.
Now, just last question, and we call this program The Pastor's Heart, and we're looking at what all of this does to your heart. What has God done with your heart as you've been deep in this area of conflict over the years?
Okay, so really honest answer. One of the things that we look at in depth is the heart and the desires of the heart. And so there have been some close friends of mine who have gently and lovingly revealed to me some of the desires of my heart that have on occasions become so consuming that they have been destructive. So, for example, wanting things my way, wanting to control things, wanting things to be of such a particular quality that other people couldn't meet that standard. And so I guess it has been a journey of discovering those parts of my thinking and behaviour that can hurt others and that I need to repent of and confess before God, and to be aware that my heart, sometimes the things that I want are good things, but if I want them too much, they can become bad things. And I think that's a common theme. It applies to me, it applies to pastors. And so to be open to God working in our hearts and to be able to repent of things that hurt others and to be able to change in ways that then redeem and restore.
Thanks very much for sharing with us. My guest on The Pastor's Heart has been Bruce Burgess. He's the National Director for Australia for Peacewise. And we just want to recommend this book, Ken Sand's book, The Peacemaker, A Biblical Guide for Resolving Personal Conflict. And I found this book super helpful when I read it about 6-7 years ago. And I can't imagine it's got less helpful since then. But it's been good to have your company on The Pastor's Heart this week, and we'll look forward to you joining us next week.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.